fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 189 of the Falcoholic Live. We are joined tonight by a very special guest. He is Trevor Sikkema at PFF, and he is still at Tampa Bay Tray, though not at Peter Report, as the nameplate is saying, but still a fan of Peter Report and everything they do there. Trevor, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, guys. Look, if I still have a Peter Report nameplate on, then it's been far too long since I've been on podcast with you guys. So I appreciate you having me back on. This is going
to be fun. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get to some draft stuff, guys, draft talk. I know Trevor's a big fan of Desmond Ridder, as well as the Falcons draft class as a whole. I just happened to listen to the Stock Exchange one where you broke down like the best and worst draft classes. And I was like, oh, okay, the Falcons aren't mentioned. Then you snuck it in at the very end, right? I was about to turn it off, you know, the Falcons class. So so that's a one-way ticket to the show, of course, when you praise the Falcons draft. But also Trevor's just a great analyst. So also with us tonight, we have two wonderful co-hosts. First of all, Adnan Ekic at Say Which Way. Adnan, how are we doing tonight?
Doing well. Still stuck in the off-season wilderness. You know, it's been a beautiful day in Atlanta though. So we're heating up in May. So really enjoying that right now.
Hey, that's not bad. Nice weather. Yeah, I think it was like 82, 83 here in Syracuse today. So it's warming up. It's warming up out there. Also with us, we have for the first time since the draft, Eric Robinson at _Eric_Robinson. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty well. Looking forward to having Trevor on here tonight. Always love his insight. Nice to see you, Trevor. Nice to see you as well, Adnan, and nice to be back on the show. It's been a little bit.
Yeah, we had to file a request for Eric's services with ESPN just to get him on tonight. So, you know, we're happy that got approved.
Yes. It's just like getting, you know, player interviews. You know, we have to go through the proper channels, you know, to get approved. But no, Eric's great. Happy to have Eric back on. And happy to see everyone else in the chat joining us as well. Damski, how you doing, man? Brandon Brass, everybody. Yeah, let's dive right in. Since we haven't heard Eric or Trevor's takes, I figure we'll just go pick by pick, and then we'll probably do a deeper dive on Desmond Ridder, because I know Trevor's got a lot of insight on Ridder, and I wanted to get his take for sure on him, considering that last week we had some folks on that, you know, weren't as high on Ridder. So I want to get you guys the positive spin. You know, we keep being told we need to be more positive. So I know Trevor's very positive about it. But let's kick things off with Drake London, and I'll open the floor to Trevor first on this. I know you're a fan of Drake London, the player. I believe you said he was your wide receiver one. What do you think about that selection for Atlanta at 8 and where he was on your board and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, no, I love Drake London. I mean, he was a top 20 player for me. Might have been top 15. I can't remember exactly where he was, but he's somebody who I've liked throughout the process for a long, long time. I had him as wide receiver one for a lot of the college football season. And, you know, I'll admit, I'm a bit of a sucker for those guys who can dominate at the catch point. I really am. And sometimes it has worked out for me. Other times I've been burned. Cough, cough, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. But, you know, when I look at Drake London, I look at how dominant he has been at USC. And I look at the fact that he had 25 contested catches, which led all of college football. And that includes him only playing 7 or 8 games this past season. There are guys that played 12, 13, 14 games this college football season that weren't able to surpass how many contested catches this guy got. He was that dominant, that good. So to say that he is just a contested catch wide receiver is not doing him justice. He's a true alpha. He's a true wide receiver one. He's one of the youngest players in this draft class, which I think is definitely a bonus as well. Does the speed worry me a little bit? Yeah, sure. But it's not like separation was really ever going to be part of his game. I feel as though, you know, he wasn't really able to do it a ton in college. I will say that I feel like Keaton Slovis's lack of arm strength goes into that.
I love it.
Right. So, I mean, I'll just say that I think that goes into it a little bit more than people are calculating. Yeah. But even though he wasn't going to be this quick hit, yards after catch kind of a guy, he's got the mentality for it. You see when he has open space in front of him, he's easily taking it, and he's taking it with a full head of steam. And of course, when it's on the money down, man, when it's third and eight and you need a catch and somebody's just got to come down with it, or you're within the 20 or the 10 and somebody's got to come down with it in red zone. That's where I have all the confidence in the world in a guy like Drake London. And certainly when you look at a wide receiver room that's as depleted as the Falcons is, this guy gets to step in right away, have all the confidence in the world to be that go-to player. And I really did. I like this selection for him. I'm a big Drake London fan.
Yeah. I like the pick too. I like the player a lot. For me, the only problem, I just wasn't a fan of wide receiver at eight. I thought going back-to-back skill position players at the top, like philosophically, was something I disagreed with, but the player is not at all an issue. Like, I mean, he was my number 10 overall player, my top receiver. So if they were going to take one, this is the one I wanted them to take. I think he fits the scheme and everything. And I agree with you that the speed stuff is overblown. I mean, I think he's probably like a mid 4.5s type of guy, but like, that's fine. Like that. Mike Evans ran a 4.53. Like, is his speed a problem? Hell no. So, you know, it's overblown, I think. And yeah, the Keaton Slovis slander is welcomed for sure. Eric, I haven't heard your take on Drake London either. So what did you think about that selection as the top pick?
So initially, I will admit, I wasn't 100% on board. I think at that particular point of the draft, I valued the edge rushers more than the receivers. And I kind of wanted them to take a swing there. But once I was able to, you know, dive a little deeper into the tape of Drake London, I understood why the selection was made. I understood the direction that they're going with the offense. If you add his ability at 6'4", you add Kyle Pitts at 6'5", hopefully they can get something out of Alton Tate, who's also north of 6'5 as well. They're trying to create mismatches in a different way. You see it around the NFL now. Teams are kind of utilizing the aspect of speed to create mismatches. But the Falcons are heading into a direction where they want to use size, strength, and overall wide catch ability, catch radius ability to create mismatches in the NFL. And I thought, you know, you can go back and look at his numbers, like Trevor pointed out. The guy only played 8 games last year, and he still won Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year with 88 receptions, which is incredible. 6 of the 8 games, I think he posted more than 100 yards. I think 4 or 5 of those games, he had 130 or more yards. So he was very productive going into games where teams knew he was the primary option on offense, and they still were not able to stop him. So when it comes to him, I always felt he has a Brandon Marshall-like ceiling because of his size and his ability. And he doesn't create the separation, but that didn't really prevent Brandon Marshall from being a very productive receiver at the NFL level. And another name that was brought up that I thought was interesting as well was Marcus Colston. And I see a lot of Marcus Colston in his game as well, and his ability to be effective as a 6'4 slot receiver. And Marcus Colston made a living in the middle of the field in that particular aspect with the Saints for a number of years. So I think if the Falcons are able to squeeze that type of production out of Drake London, it'll be well worth it. And I, you know, I'm fine with the pick at this point, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I certainly get what they were going for, and it was clearly a big need on the roster, so it's hard to get too upset with it, but it's more, it feels kind of nitpicky, you know, now in hindsight, considering what they did with the rest of the draft, but, you know, we can't be too positive on this program. You know, we got to make sure we bring on Aaron Freeman, too, to make sure we get enough hating going on here, but we can't be too rosy. Fair and balanced coverage here on the Alcoholic Live. So.
I do like the point Trevor made about how young Drake London is. This will be his age 21 season, and then you have Kyle Pitts, who the Falcons took last year. He's turning 22 in October. So these are two guys who are probably going to easily work into their second contracts in the NFL, maybe even third. So this is a great opportunity for Atlanta to have two guys really grow with one another. And you're not really desperate right away to have that that impact, you know, quarterback. Right now, you can kind of wait a little bit on Desmond Ridder if he is the guy, because these guys next season are going to be, what, 21 and 22? So, I mean, these guys will be able to grow with whatever quarterback you put out there, whatever young quarterback, whether that's Ridder or someone else in the next couple drafts.
Yeah. I think the pick makes sense. I think they're trying to get big and physical at wide receiver. And you guys have mentioned also his ability to play the slot, which is not an emphasized position in the Arthur Smith offense, but it is nice to be able to have that flexibility to move him in there from time to time. So I think we're all definitely fans of that pick. The next pick, I know Trevor's a huge fan of. I was a huge fan of it as well. It was a small trade up. The Falcons gave up their fourth rounder to go up to get edge rusher Arnold Ebiketie from Penn State. A big-time addition to the pass rush that was desperately needed. Trevor, what do you think about the Falcons' second pick there in Arnold Ebiketie?
Look, I liked it a lot, and this is somebody who, you know, Arnold Ebiketie spent some time at Temple as well, transferred over to Penn State, so he's one of the older prospects. You know, you talked about the age of Drake London. Arnold Ebiketie is a little bit older, but I think he's also more refined. Like, this is the kind of player that can come in and play right away for you. He was able to come in this past year, have a ton of success at Penn State. I mean, he flashes no matter what player you're watching. I was watching Brandon Smith, the linebacker. I'd watch Jaquan Brisker, the safety. And the whole time I'm watching him, it's just like, damn, 17 pops in the line of scrimmage. And the reason why is because the vertical jump, the broad jump, 90th percentile explosiveness scores, and this dude's just getting off the ball extremely quick. And I think he learned how to use his hands a lot better this year. He had a really nice pass rush plan a lot of times, but again, that comes from experience. It comes from being a little bit older. And so I feel like this is a player who can really step in right away and be productive in a pass rush room that I think they desperately needed it. Now, I definitely understand Eric's point of, hey, there were bigger trench needs on this team for you to really take a skill position player at number eight, or as Kevin, you brought up, like back-to-back skill position players in back-to-back seasons. But I think, you know, if a Kayvon Thibodeau would have made it to number eight, I think that maybe the situation is a little bit different, but I liked how they navigated this draft, especially with their first two picks, because if you're not picking George Pickens, where the Falcons did Arnold Ebiketie in the second round, then there really was not any other wide receiver that was going to give you the ceiling of a Drake London, if you ask me. Like, I like Sky Moore as much as anybody else, but like Sky Moore hitting a Drake London type of ceiling of production is still a bit of a reach. I think George Pickens can, but I think there's a lot that kind of goes into that with what people talked about with motivation and focus and off the field stuff. I've never met the dude, so I hate talking about character of people that I've never met. But yeah, I think all that goes into it with George Pickens. But outside of him, you got the better deal getting Drake London at the top and then Arnold Ebiketie at the back end of the second round, or the front end of the second round. So I liked how they went boom, boom with wide receiver and edge rusher, how they kind of prioritized that there. The draft itself, where the main goal is to get as many good players as possible, there is a game within the game of how you navigate things and the intel you have on the other teams and where you think the draft is deepest to where you believe that you can hit a certain position at a certain point in the draft. And I thought the Falcons did a good job of prioritizing what they believe is dominant playmaker in the passing game at the top, which they didn't think they were going to get in the top of the second round, and then getting an edge rusher that I really do think they can depend upon a lot even this next year with Arnold Ebiketie. So I like what he brings to the table from an immediate standpoint with him being an older prospect, a little bit more refined in his details. And I just liked how they navigated those first two picks overall.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I think that certainly in hindsight, it looks better too, because of they set off this massive wide receiver run and it, you know, caused the Saints to feel like they needed to move up for Olave. And, you know, maybe you're saying like, oh, well, we just made our rival, you know, spend an extra pick to get their guy, you know, haha, and all that. So, you know, I like the gamesmanship angle of that, if you want to go down that path. But yeah, I mean, Drake London's a great player, and there weren't a lot of true, like, sort of prototypical X guys out there. Drake London was sort of the clear one, and I agree, like, George Pickens was sort of that other option. And, you know, Christian Watson probably in that mold, too. Another guy that's going to need probably some time before he's going to sort of take over that dynamic number one role in a passing game. But, yeah, considering how the board fell, you know, the top tackles were off the board, the top edge rushers, three of them were already off the board. It made it easier to swallow a wide receiver there, because I think you could say, well, you know, we'd rather have wide receiver one than edge four, you know, even if edge four is a good player. So, Eric, what do you think about Ebiketie coming in?
You know, to kind of sort of go back on Trevor's point as far as you know, the draft being somewhat of a chess match to a certain extent. You know, the teams, and I mentioned this before on the show, teams have enough intel when you go into draft day. They have a general idea as far as what other teams are thinking and what direction they're going. And I'm pretty sure the Falcons probably felt like, hey, yes, we can take another receiver. They easily could have went Jameson Williams. They easily could have went Garrett Wilson, but they wanted that Drake London type guy. And they knew that if they missed out on that the first go around, they might not have gotten another Drake London type impact player in round two or round three. So I think that's why they kind of swung for the fences for Drake London in that particular situation. Not to mention that they probably knew that there was going to be a slew of teams in the first round that was going to take a swing there as well. So, but when it comes to Ebikade, you know, he's a Temple transfer, first year at Penn State, 18 and a half tackles for loss, nine sacks, which is pretty impressive. And if you throw on the tape, like Trevor pointed out, if you throw on the tape, you can't help but notice him. Yeah. He's really much more of a technician type edge rusher. And one thing that I like a lot is his ability to be able to set up the opposing offensive lineman before he's able to make his initial move. And it's one of those things that you have to learn. You have to kind of polish that particular part of your craft. And he's there already. He is definitely, in my opinion, one of the more NFL-ready edge rushers in the draft. He's not going to be a type of guy that's going to need a season or two of, you know, riding the bench and learning the ropes. Like, I think he's probably one of those guys that's ready to go in for day one. Not saying he's going to be, you know, not saying he's going to lead the league in sacks or anything, but just saying he's one of those ready edge rushers that you can put out there in week one, and he can probably, you know, be productive for you to a certain extent. So I don't mind the pick. I like it. And it adds a guy who I think is going to have one of those particular careers where, you know, it may not equate to a number of all pro nominations, or it may not equate to a number of Pro Bowls, but next thing you know, you look up and he has four or five, maybe six double digit sack seasons. So it's a productive one. So I like it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this was a good class to get a player like Ebikade at the top, because I think, you know, maybe you wonder, you're probably not putting him in the same class as like a Thibodeau or an Aiden Hutchinson, you know, these guys at the very top that are these like prototypical edge one, you know, perennial Pro Bowler type of guys. But Ebikade's right below that group. And I think getting someone like him at this point is a necessary building block for the Falcons that really didn't even have a number two. I mean, maybe you could say that Lorenzo Carter could be a number two, but like last year Dante Fowler wasn't even a number two for them. Not to mention they didn't have a number three either. So getting guys like Ebikade in here, you know,
oh, Fowler.
Yeah. Fowler. Dante Fowler ref. Yep. Yeah. No, we've moved on from that. 16 and a half million, everyone. Yeah.
Go ahead.
And the guys that support their own comp pick.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Very true.
Man.
Oof. Yeah. Okay. Moving on from that. Yeah. We gotta keep the wheels turning here. Right. Yeah. Not anything else you wanted there on that.
I was going to say, aren't we going to mention how Lorenzo Carter also cost us a fourth round comp pick?
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to.
Well, I mean, you can mention that, but then we met your quota, right? Like, we got a bulldog on the roster.
We got two.
We got some dogs.
We got some dogs. Yeah. Well, we decided that the quota had to be two.
Yeah, to make up.
Wait, it's three. They drafted two and they brought in Carter. So, they're good for the next 10 years, right?
No, Carter, no, there has to be two Bulldogs every single draft, and it replenishes every year.
Yes. Got to get the dogs. Okay, that's the only thing we care about, is we got to draft some dogs.
This was a good start.
Yeah, yep. They're going the correct direction now in terms of drafting dogs, according to the fan base. Okay. Yeah, I like the Ebikade pick. It's a good pick.
I do too.
Yeah. Next pick, one of the ones that I think there was more splitting on, although I do really like this player, is linebacker Troy Anderson from Montana State, a guy who's obviously just an incredible athlete, you know, a perfect 10, as I like to say on the RAS score, just incredible testing, sort of a jack of all trades guy, played quarterback, running back, linebacker, was basically all conference, like every position he tried to play. So I have a lot of faith in him, you know, growing into whatever role the Falcons want to put him in, because he's done it. Yeah. Go ahead.
He's a former starter.
Yeah.
At quarterback as well. Like, this is not just a guy that was like a third stringer. No, like he he was on the field extensively at quarterback.
Oh yeah. No, I think he was like their starting quarterback after their original starter got hurt and just like, you know, was all conference or something. And then all conference running back and then all conference linebacker. I think he was like the conference player of the year or something like that this year. Yeah. So, I like the pick. I like the fit in this defense. I like the size. I like everything about it. I think this is a good place to take a swing on somebody like that. Trevor, what do you think about Troy Andersen in Atlanta?
I just thought it was a little early for Troy Andersen with Atlanta. The only thing that I really don't like about this pick is I think Atlanta is worse off on the offensive line than maybe they believe. So you know, like this is a pick where Bernard Raymond, Dylan Parham, Abraham Lucas, Sean Ryan, like all of these guys are still on the board. And I don't mind Troy Andersen. Obviously, he's one hell of an athlete. He is just a naturally damn good football player. I do think that he struggles a little bit with just like between the tackles, physicality stuff, which kind of worries me a little bit. I actually like Rashawn Evans a decent amount. So like they brought him in. They obviously have Deion Jones as well. So like right. That's true. I like Troy Andersen, the player. I would have just liked it. Like, if the Falcons pick Troy Andersen, let me pull up the draft here. Like, if they happen to pick Troy Andersen.
74?
Like, even, well, 74 is kind of strange because it's a quarterback pick and I liked it. So, like, I feel weird. Like,
if you switch it up,
But, like, if you would have picked him at, like, 82 instead of Malone, then I would have been like, okay, I like this a little bit more, especially if this pick here at 58 would have been an offensive line pick. I would have liked that a lot more. So that's kind of my thing overall is that I don't mind Troy Andersen. I wasn't as big on him as some other people were because for as much as I do praise how much of a natural athlete he is, it is a position that demands a lot of physicality. And there were times when I felt like he was not as physically imposing as I would have liked him to be at the FCS level. And that only gets way harder at the NFL. So dude can move. Dude's a really great athlete, but being able to hold your own from a strength profile is still a prerequisite to playing linebacker in the NFL. For as much as we are getting lighter and faster and all of that on both sides of the ball, linebackers still need to be able to hit when you're talking about a guy who you picked in the second round at number 58. He's got to be able to play all three downs for you eventually. Will Andersen have that strength profile? And if he does, great, he works out. But even if he does, I kind of wish they would have taken a chance on an offensive lineman instead. So that's my overall thoughts on the pick. Like the player, wish they would have picked offensive line.
Yeah, I think this is the one spot where some people get off the train. You know, just like I really like Troy Andersen. I was pretty high on him, but even I had him as like a third round grade. So like this was early on my board a little bit. I do really, you know, I think if you're going to take a swing on a 10, you know, perfect 10 guy, like, you know, the athletic ceiling is really high. So like, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I agree. Like they seem to really have faith in Jalen Mayfield and Matt Hennessy and Drew Dahlman that there's going to be something there. I think it's okay to have faith in like one of those guys, like one of those three, maybe you could be like, okay, like Matt Hennessy. Yeah. We think you can get better. You know, it's talked about a lot. PFF really liked Matt Hennessy last year, you know, because of his run blocking. Fans are definitely more split on him, but you know, nobody liked Jalen Mayfield. He had a single digit PFF grade. Yeah.
Even Trevor had to smirk at that a little bit.
Yeah. No, he had one of the lowest grades of any player in the season. He might've had the lowest. I haven't checked in a while, but I remember like we were like more than halfway through the season and I looked at his season grade and it was like a 31 overall out of 100. And I was like, holy cow. I didn't know that was possible.
He had a 1.6 against the Eagles last year.
He did. Yeah.
I had no idea that was possible. So we learned a lot about the grading system. So that's always a plus. Yeah. But I don't disagree with the idea that offensive line would have been, I think Dylan Parham would have been awesome here. You know, I know that there were a lot of Jamari Salyer fans too. You know, speaking of dogs, he ended up going way later than I expected. No,
we could have gotten him in the sixth round.
Yeah, apparently. So, but yeah, I don't disagree with that. And you know, I think it's like if Andersen reaches a ceiling and is a three down linebacker, then no one's going to complain. But it was definitely a sort of home run swing, and I don't hate it, you know, where this team is, but we really need to see some improvement from Mayfield and Hennessy or Dahlman, whichever two of those guys end up starting, because there really isn't anything else, and the offensive line was a massive problem last year. So, yeah. Eric, what did you think about Anderson?
I don't think it was early. I think it was fair range for him. I think it's more so of an emphasis that's trying to be placed on the inside linebacker position in the DMP's defense. I think the days of your 6 feet, 215-pound linebackers manning the middle are over. And I think this was a huge domino to fall that will lead to eventually moving on from Deion Jones, to be honest with you. I think it kind of sort of started with Foye Oluokun. I think they liked him. They wanted to bring him back. Of course, the price tag was too heavy, but I don't think they looked at it as an issue like, okay, you know what? We're losing a really key member, a key part of this defense. I think he wants to get bigger and stronger and more physical at the inside linebacker spot. And Anderson provides that. If you look at the receiving room, I mean, not the receiver room, the linebacker room now with Anderson, with Rashawn Evans, and including Michael Walker, they're all at least 6'2 and above 230 plus. And they all are athletic. They're able to run and they're physical. And that's not something that Deion Jones can check. Those are not boxes that he can check right now. And I think he's kind of sort of the odd man out. He kind of sticks out like a sore thumb in that linebacker room right now. But when it comes to Anderson himself, again, I thought he was more so of a late second, early third guy. And I think they're really rolling the dice here on potential. And I think the potential there is huge for a guy like Troy Anderson. I think he, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he led the FCS last year in tackles. And like you said, like you pointed out, he won Defensive Player of the Year. The guy can move, man. He really can. 6'3", 245. The guy ran a 4.4 at the combine, had 38-inch vertical, I believe.
Yeah. I'll pull it up. It was crazy.
He had insane numbers. And again, his ability, he was all conference at quarterback. He was all conference at running back. Not to mention, he won Defensive Player of the Year at linebacker. So that tells you he's able to play the sport of football. There's just little certain things that he needs to figure out a little bit. And I think that's because of the lack of experience at the linebacker position. There's some refinement that is needed there, but I think they might, if it does, you're looking at a guy, honestly, that can be a potential all pro later on down the line. Like I'm that high on his potential.
Yeah. The athletic ceiling is absolutely there. I mean, he is sort of a unicorn at linebacker. We know how much they like unicorns in that metaphor. So,
right. and it's, a lot of people, and I don't know if I really wanted to lean in this direction, but a lot of people thought they tossed out the name Brian Urlacher when it came to him. And Brian Urlacher,
pretty aggressive.
That is pretty aggressive. But I wanna say, okay, in terms of the frame and the athleticism, you can see it. You can see small signs of it. But I don't want to go out on a limb and say, man, this guy's a future Hall of Famer.
No, that's very aggressive. Yeah. It's like the foundation of a Brian Urlacher is all there.
It is.
But he's got to build the house now. So we got a lot of building to do.
There's some building that needs to happen. There's some polish that still needs to be applied to his game.
You guys heard it here first. Eric is guaranteeing.
Saying he's the next Brian Urlacher. I'm just saying he's pretty big and he's pretty athletic for the inside linebacker in today's game. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Those numbers are insane, though.
His numbers are ridiculous.
Yeah. 6'3 and a half, 243, over 32 inch arms, 4.42, 40, 149, 10 yard split, which is faster than a lot of edge rushers.
That's incredible.
36 vert, 10'8" broad, 6'7", 7'3" cone. Wow. That's
incredible. Yeah. That is incredible.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but the coaching staff has kind of gone out of its way to just not mention Deion Jones at all when talking about the linebackers.
It's true.
The last couple times, it wasn't just a one-off thing. It's happened a couple times where they were listing out the linebackers and Deion Jones' name never came up. So I think his days are numbered in Atlanta. Right. And I think that this is a pick preparing for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Anderson, I think he'll be an instant impact special teams guy in his rookie year. I don't think he'll, especially if Deion Jones is kept this season. I don't know if he'll make an immediate impact day one, but this is a guy where the coaching staff, the GM trusts the coaching staff to develop Troy Anderson, because you don't make this kind of pick if you don't have the utmost confidence in your coaching staff from a developmental angle. And I mean, I like what I've seen from this coaching staff thus far. They developed, well, not Richie Grant last year, obviously, because he couldn't learn the playbook, but you know, they developed some of those late round guys pretty well last year. Ogundeji for one, some of those undrafted guys like Rush. So yeah, I mean, I trust them too as of now, and you know, let's see what they can do with a guy who's essentially a ball of clay right now.
Quick question for Trevor. Let's just say Anderson called Death Valley home for the last 2 or 3 years, and he was rocking the Clemson helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And you take the numbers, you take the measurables, and you just apply it to a little bit more experience in a better, you know, in a better atmosphere, in a better, you know, a more recognizable playing field for him.
Mm-hmm.
Then where would he fall in this draft? Where would he be?
Let me look up linebackers. Linebackers in the draft. Quay went 22. Devin Lloyd went 27. And then the next one was Troy Anderson. So, I think he still would have been a second round pick, maybe a little bit earlier. I don't really think that he's cracking the first round again, because like, I don't think he was, I don't know if you were trying to set this up by asking this question, but like, I don't know if you were trying to like give off Isaiah Simmons vibes, like from how freakishly athletic Isaiah Simmons was as a potential guy who could play multiple positions for you. And Isaiah Simmons goes 8 overall. Yeah. I don't think that he would have been seen in that kind of a light, but
more so of if he had a little bit more experience in a more recognizable place where he has the chance to become more of a household name, then where would he fall? Would it still be?
Probably it would have been the second round. It would have been, I still think he would have been a second round pick, because I thought the second round was early for him anyway. So if you put him in an environment where he's more recognizable, maybe he does have some more hype to him, because look, GMs and coaches love to do that. They love to take guys from the bigger schools, the bigger programs. It's just, it's less of a projection. You've seen him do it against a better competition. Like if you would have said the same thing, like if you would have said, okay, put him in, I don't want to say Alabama, but
if he was rocking, you know, he was in the Big 12 for the past.
Yeah, or if you would have said like, okay, he's playing middle linebacker for Texas A&M, or he's playing middle linebacker from LSU. He's probably going like early second round-ish, yeah. I would think.
Yeah, if he has that production against that level of competition.
I mean, if he has the exact same production, but at LSU, then we're probably talking about him first going as like a linebacker one. If you just take Troy Anderson, this player, make him a linebacker full time and put him at one of the bigger programs in the country, he'd probably still be a second round pick. It might just be a little bit earlier. That's just my opinion. This is what I think.
Okay, good discussion. Definitely appreciate that. We're gonna briefly skip over Ritter. We'll do Ritter last, because I know we're gonna have a lot of takes on Ritter. But let's go to D'Angelo Malone next, who I know you're also a big fan of, Trevor. What do you think about the Falcons double dipping, getting another pass rusher in here?
Yeah, I love the double dip, even more than just like the player himself, which I like Malone. I mean, it's a high ceiling dude. He brings you the size, he brings you the explosiveness, the athleticism. That's exactly what you want. This is also a perfect complement to, we already drafted our edge rusher that we believe can be solid for us right away. And not to say that Arnold Ebikade doesn't have a high ceiling, I don't mean to say it like that, they already spent the higher pick on an edge rusher that they probably have a lot of confidence in, that's going to come in and start right away. Now they take a massive swing at the bat by double dipping as early as they did, three selections later for them. So look, I love it from Malone. I think that he's got a ton of potential. My co-host at NFL Stock Exchange, Connor Rogers from Bleacher Report, He was even higher on Malone than I was. I think he had Malone as like a top 50 player. In the
class. Oh, yeah, that's so right. That's right. Yeah.
He absolutely loved them. You know, getting Malone at 82 compared to a top 50 player with his grade. I can't remember where Malone was around this area for me on my big board. So I liked him. I thought this was a great spot for him. I felt like the Falcons, with this being their second edge rusher of the draft, fantastic pick. I felt like edge rusher is just so depleted for them. I wanted to see them double dip anyways. They go back-to-back guys who have really high ceilings when it comes to that athletic profile. So I liked it. I really did.
Yeah, yeah. And I just remember from the Senior Bowl watching, for whatever reason, Malone just looked tiny at the Senior Bowl. He's not tiny, but he was going up against Trevor Penning. And, like, I just remember him getting up under Penning and just pushing him over. And I was like, who is this dude?
He's got to get bigger anyway. He does. He's got to get bigger anyway. Because, he's coming in as an edge rusher at, like 235. I don't remember. What did he come at?
It was, 245. It actually wasn't bad. Yeah.
Did he come in at 245?
I'll pull it up. Yeah. It was better than I thought. But
there we go. He was 243, but here's the thing.
Okay. Yeah.
He gained weight to get to 243, I think. I think so. 243 is still third percentile.
Yeah.
For defensive ends.
You wanted to see him more at 250-ish at the combine once he was weighing in and things. Yeah.
That's what you want. Like, I think this dude's still got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger. But again, that's the reason why I like this pick. You already have Ebukadie. Now you get a player who you go, okay, we don't need you year one. Year one, get with the strength coach, get with the trainer, get up to 250, keep the athleticism at 250. Let's make something happen year two, year three. Let's roll. So that's why I like the pick.
Oh no, I like it. I like it too. I like that I like that he put Trevor Penning on his butt too. That's a plus, considering that he's going to be on the Saints now. So
notice a trend. There's a trend here with the picks that they've made. You know, you took London, who was Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. You took Ebukadie, and then you took Anderson, who was FCS Defensive Player of the Year. Of course, Ritter was a two-time AAC Offensive Player of the Year. D'Angelo Malone was Conference USA Defensive Player of the Year last year as well. So notice the trend here that they're grabbing guys who stood out amongst their peers in their respective conferences.
Yeah, and Senior Bowl guys too.
Five and out Senior Bowl guys as well. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. This is another. It was a fun pick. I did his highlight for the NFL draft, which was pretty cool. So I got a chance to watch a lot of his games, and all you have to do is just throw on a Western Kentucky tape, and you can just tell. Of course, he's the best defensive player on the field for Western Kentucky. And look at his numbers. I think he's had at least 10.5 tackles for loss in each of the last three seasons. I think this past year he had 17.
Yeah.
40 sacks in his career at Western Kentucky. The guy is just he's a perfect complimentary edge rusher. I would be nervous if this was the first edge rusher that they took. I really would be.
Right.
I don't like the direction that they're going, but the fact that they drafted him as the
third guy, basically.
In a 1-2 punch, I like it. And Kevin, how long have we been playing for this? For the Falcons to double dip at edge rusher, and they finally did it, and they took two guys that are two of the better edge rushers in the draft.
Yeah, so and really a type. Excited. Yeah, they have a type now too. These are definitely more 3-4 style edge, outside linebacker style edge rushers, as opposed to they were working with a lot of Dan Quinn guys, and there is some overlap there. Dan Quinn likes to use a jack in his 4-3 unders. That can be similar in a lot of ways to a 3-4 outside linebacker who's going to stand up part of the time and all that. But these two are definitely more prototypical 3-4 outside linebacker guys for Dean Pees. And I think that'll be a good thing for them. When they do want them to put their hand in the dirt, both these guys can. Ebukadie has done it well. And I like it. I think Malone, you're hoping that he's basically your number three pass rusher, long-term, your number three defensive end, your number three edge guy. And I think he could be a really good number three edge. I think he comes in, he can probably this year, he's more of a designated pass rusher, for all the reasons that Trevor mentioned, he's a guy that's going to have to get stronger, to be able to play the run, but maybe someone who has some off ball flexibility too, we'll see, but, I like the pick. I love the double dip at edge. We've been clamoring for that forever. So just getting even they needed bodies so bad. you know, Lorenzo Carter was just like a mile ahead of every other player on the roster. And at least now there's a few intriguing guys. I mean, I like Ogundeji from last year. I think he's maybe they have something there. But other than that, it was pretty much a barren wasteland after Lorenzo Carter. So,
And I've always said this team needs more Hilltoppers on it. So, you know, that'll definitely help as well. But no, I think they'll put Malone in a position this year where he doesn't have to worry about anything other than just rushing the passer. He'll probably be on there for a lot of third downs as well. And, you know, just taking away that responsibility, everything else, not having to account for anything else will help him out some. And it'll, I think, help him help the team in making an impact right away in his rookie season. I love his length. He's a really quick guy. And yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about having, what, 10-plus tackles the past 3 years. It doesn't matter what level you're at in the college game. That's pretty impressive. And I was a big fan of this pick when it happened. And, yeah, our pass rush will be much better from the unit that had an abysmal 18 sacks last year, which was less than...
As a team, Trevor, yeah. Yeah.
Less than what Robert Quinn and T.J. Watt had by themselves.
I chipped in with 1.5, by the way.
Yeah,
that. That would have been good for what, second on the team then?
Yeah,
and I think at least two of those were the offensive linemen falling backwards on the quarterback, and you know there was just a Falcon in the area. So, that's very dire straits. Hopefully, we're not talking about less than 20 sacks again anytime soon.
In a 17-game season, no.
In a 17-game season, yep. That's like one, a little over one. It's like 1.1 sacks per game, like less.
Yeah. I think the stat was that was the second fewest the Falcons have ever had, and the fewest was during the lockout, like the like 9-game season in the 70s or the 80s.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, well, let's not linger on that point for too long. It's too depressing, but... Day three, there were a couple picks. The big one is running back Tyler Allgeier, the fifth rounder. I like it. I think this is – under Dan Quinn, we rarely saw rookie running backs get a chance to do much. You know, even when they had Tevin Coleman in the second round, he didn't really make an impact his rookie year. We'll see what happens with Arthur Smith. I think Allgeier has a good chance to make an impact. Trevor, what do you think about Allgeier?
It's my RB3. Don't know how he lasted until the fifth round. I like Tyler Allgeier a lot. Now, I didn't think that he was the full-time potential bell cow back that Kenneth Walker and Breece Hall were. Those guys are firmly in that tier one and two class here with these running backs. But after that, it was a total pick your poison kind of running back room. You know, it was going to be rotational guys. It was going to be guys who were specialized in certain situations. And with that being the case, I like Tyler Allgeier, man. I get it. He's not as flexible. He doesn't have the lateral agility that some of these other players have, but I still love his feet. I love the momentum that he gets when he gets going in a straight line. He's hard to bring down. He's got some of the best contact balance in the class. I think he's got decent straight line speed as well once he gets moving. And he's a good blocker. I think he can give you third down responsibilities as well. I love the linebacker background because, well, shoot, I love the background overall for this kid. He was a walk-on for 2 years at BYU before he got a scholarship, at running back. They had a bunch of injuries at linebacker. Linebacker coach comes to him and says, hey, you want to play linebacker? It'll get you on the field. Allgeier said, yeah, absolutely. I want to get on the field. So he played linebacker for half a season for BYU before moving back over to running back when they started to have injuries there and added over 1,000 yards in that one incredible season with Zach Wilson, and he was a catalyst for their offense this past year as well. So I just love where the kid's motivation has been, love his journey, love the fact that he understands what it's like to not just be the ball carrier, but to be the pursuer, to be the linebacker. So he's been in both shoes, if you will. Like that background for him. I like him as a one-cut back, and I like him in Atlanta specifically. You know, you got Cordarrelle Patterson and Damian Williams on the roster. Cordarrelle Patterson's probably going to take a lot of the attention, snaps, focus with out of the backfield play, but they also know that they can use Cordarrelle Patterson in a variety of different ways. So when you've got those short yardage situations, you've got that power guy. I feel like Tyler Allgeier has every chance to win a job in that area. So I think that big fan of his game, big fan of where he landed in Atlanta. I'm expecting big things from him. I really am.
Yeah, I think there's a really clear path, and you can't always say this about fifth round picks, but I think there's a really clear path for Algier to take on a sizable role immediately. And the Falcons did add Damian Williams. They also got they released Mike Davis recently, who did just land with the Ravens. So good for him, getting another team there. But you know, it's they needed an early down grinder. They needed someone to take those carries off of Patterson's plate, because Patterson, when used sort of as the chess piece that he is, used in high leverage situations, when he wasn't having to carry the whole load, he was really efficient, both as a runner and as a receiver. As the season went on and he started taking 10, 15, 20 touches a game, it really, you could tell it was wearing him down. So I think if you can get Algier to take a lot of that early down work, take some of that off of Patterson's plate, save Patterson for those high leverage situations, and then you sort of mix in Damian Williams as needed, I think that's a recipe for a better overall running back room. And the thing with Algier to me is that when he had the blocking, he was just unstoppable. Like if he has a hole, he's getting 3 yards. Like he's a really reliable short yardage guy. He's not going to go down on first contact. I think his vision was pretty darn good. I like his, I mean, he's not the most elusive guy, but I thought his feet actually were pretty good. Like he makes quick cuts. He's really good in the zone blocking system. So I think he can handle that short yardage role. Obviously great in the red zone with the 23 touchdowns. Not necessarily dynamic in terms of long speed, fairly average there, but a guy that can get you those chunk 10 to 15 yard runs if you get him into open space because of his contact balance and all that stuff. So I think it's a great fit, and I think he has a pretty good chance to end up a sort of a surprising contributor this year. I think he has a great shot. And, you know, that's the thing with running backs. Like, you can get them pretty much anywhere in the draft. And if they have a path to success, you know, for those of you drafting in fantasy, like, Tyler Algier is probably not going to be at the top of any lists unless you're really digging deep. But that's a guy that you could probably get for almost undrafted price in fantasy drafts that has a legit chance to take on a sizable backfield role. But, yeah, Eric, what do you think about Algier coming to Atlanta?
Two things that stand out to me. 1,600 yards, 23 touchdowns last season in 13 games for BYU. He had 4 games where he ran for 190 yards or more. And 2 of those games were above 200 yards. This kid, now he didn't really win any all-conference accolades, like I pointed out with the previous guys that were drafted, but he did win Offensive Player of the Game in the bowl game, in their bowl game against UAB. And production is the one thing that stands out. Throwing a tape, you rarely see him go backwards on runs. He's always going, he's always falling forward. Didn't he lead FBS last year in missed tackles?
Maybe it was missed tackles forced.
Forced missed tackles or might have been like
rushing
that.
Touchdowns too.
Yeah, rushing touchdowns, of course. Yeah. But again, he's a type of, and again, he's not, I don't think he's going to win a ton of foot races, but he's going to be one of those runners where he gets better as the game goes on. It's going to be tough to tackle. Now, I saw a lot of, well, I saw a ton of James Conner comparisons. I don't know if that strikes me because he doesn't look 225 on tape. He looks smaller. He really does. But he runs like he's 225, 230 pounds. Definitely runs behind his pads. So he is going to bring a level of physicality that the Falcons are wanting. And when you already kind of sort of have that in the backfield with Cordero Patterson and with Algier, is you know, if everything rounds itself into shape, you know, defenses are going to be pretty tired to try to tackle these guys for 4 quarters. That's for sure.
And the stats were he was tied for first in rushing touchdowns, and he forced 76 missed tackles, which was 6th most in the FBS.
6th most. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that this is a pick where he'll more than anything open up Cordero Patterson a bit more. Because last year, because Mike Davis really didn't get it done for the Falcons, Patterson was really forced into that backfield role where he was given that traditional running back load of, you know, those inside handoffs, those inside carries, because nobody else was getting yardage for the team in that role. And as a result, we saw Cordero Patterson break down toward the end of the season. This year, you have Damian Williams, who you picked up in free agency, one of the 1,000 Chicago Bears that we brought in. You have Algier now, who's gonna be out there. He's gonna make an impact from day one, and he's a pretty good pass blocker as well, which is what you have to have as a rookie running back. You're not seeing the field if you can't block for your quarterback. So as a result, Cordarrelle Patterson will get some of those backfield carries, but now Arthur Smith can sort of use him as that X factor on offense. He can line him up wherever he wants. And, you know, he can even use him as that third wide receiver or third target behind Kyle Pitts, Drake London. And he can really open up the offense a little bit more. And, you know, he can really get more creative with Patterson than what we saw last year. And that could result in an even better year for Patterson this year from an efficiency standpoint, even if it's not better from a pure yardage standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. And the hope, obviously, is that the run blocking improves, too. Obviously, we'll see how that goes. But because if the run blocking's bad, then everyone's going to struggle. But if the run blocking can be better, I think that that bodes well for Algier and for Patterson and the rest of the running back group. All right, guys, I think it's that time for Desmond Ridder, the first third round pick at pick 74, which I thought was a terrific value to get a guy like Desmond Ridder that late. Trevor, I believe he was your QB1 in this class. So yeah, talk to me about Desmond Ridder and why fans should be excited that he's in Atlanta now.
Okay. I do have to preface it by saying QB1 in this class does not mean what it has meant in different classes.
Trevor Lawrence, basically, right? Yeah.
Yeah, right. Him and Trevor Lawrence on the same playing field. The reason why I thought that Desmond Ridder was QB1 in this class is because in a class of a lot of uncertain projections with a lot of different players, Ridder has already checked a lot of boxes. I think that he has the best pocket management, I think, of any quarterback that we were talking about as a potential franchise guy or starting quarterback. He understands how to manage the pocket. It's not this gimmicky offense where, you know, like, for example, Matt Corral, one read, he's gone. Like, that's it. There's no pocket management there. It's you're reading one player on the defense. You're either throwing the ball, or you're tucking it and running it. It's not really, that doesn't really teach you how to manage pressure and get the internal clock right and all that kinds of stuff. Desmond Ridder operated an offense that allowed him to do 3, 5, 7 step dropbacks, more quick stuff than sevens, but he was able to do a lot of different kinds of dropbacks. He was able to go through different kinds of progressions. He was able to navigate things really well in that regard. I think that he could see defenses very, very well. He just operated in an offense that I think was translatable to the NFL, that it's not going to be this giant projection of, okay, what is he going to be? Because look, I think that everybody can talk about Malik Willis's physical gifts, and there's no doubt about it. He had the highest ceiling of any quarterback in this class. Malik Willis has the arm strength and he has the leg mobility. He has all of that stuff to be an incredible quarterback, but he is so far away from even proving that in college. What he was able to do was simply flashes. That was it. Now, he played behind a terrible offensive line at Liberty, so he wasn't going to get any better through that. But that doesn't mean that you're going to play him in the NFL and all of a sudden it's just going to get better for him. It's still going to be time. It's still going to be him working on that and getting that down. And some guys don't. There's no guarantee that that happens. And so that's a massive projection for Malik Willis, even for people who think the best of his abilities and think of the highest ceiling that he could be. Look, some people compare Malik Willis to Lamar Jackson when he was coming out. Guys, Lamar Jackson won a Heisman. Like that's dumb. That's we can't be
it's unfair
that.
To it's right. unfair that's, to that's, both of them. Yeah.
That's absolutely silly to be doing that. And I think Malik Willis
lazy as well.
Right. It is. It's yeah. I mean, it's totally lazy. And he's just like he's so much further away from achieving his ceiling than Lamar Jackson was. And Kenny Pickett, I have worries that his arm strength is ever going to be what it needs to be in the NFL, even beyond just the small hands. I mean, just normal athletic ability. Sam Howell's never tried a steak before, so you know that's that's obviously
yeah.
something
big red
that's,
flag.
That's something that's a big red flag. No,
take
I
him
like,
off the board immediately for
I,
that.
I do like Sam Howell outside of his meat takes, but I think that he's going to be okay. Him getting to sit behind Carson Wentz, or maybe even start this year. Who knows? We never know with Carson Wentz. All that to say, getting back to Desmond Ridder, I think he managed the pocket better than anybody. He's certainly shown that more than anybody over the college football season, at least these draft eligible quarterbacks. He knows how to go through progressions. He knows how to read defenses. He knows how to call things out in the pre-snap. His mechanics are already very, very clean. I think that what he does from his footwork to how wide his base is, how short his throwing motion is, exactly where he's leading the ball to his target, I think that he does things from a disciplined, detailed standpoint very, very well. I think he's got good and adequate arm strength. I think he's got some added mobility to him. He's certainly tall enough to see over the offensive line, which is important. Yeah. The only thing that really holds me back with Desmond Ridder is the touch portion of the accuracy part of his game is sometimes lacking. And guys, I have no idea why.
Yeah.
I have no idea why. There, I read a lot of Nate Tice's work because he does incredible work. And being a former quarterback, he's able to see things very, very well. And he said that what he noticed about Ridder is that sometimes it's at the beginning of games. And maybe it's the fact that Ritter's just like too amped up at the beginning of games that he's missing these throws. And there is reason to believe that could be the case because a lot of his missed throws do come at the beginning of the games, but not all of them. Sometimes there's like a floater pass to the end zone that should absolutely have been picked off. And I'm like, dude, what are you? Touch is the hardest thing to improve on in the NFL. You can improve overall accuracy numbers. People like to say like, oh, he had a 63% accuracy. Okay, look, let's be honest here. You could bump that up to 67, 68 simply by getting on the field and just repetition, muscle memory, rhythm, timing with your wide receivers. You can increase that kind of number in your stats. Touch passes are much more of a natural gift that you have or you don't. That stuff is really tough to teach. And when Ridder misses, he misses with touch. And that's the part that where he was my QB1 because of all those other reasons, that's something that is holding him back in my mind from truly being a potential franchise type quarterback. Because that's something that really worries me that might not get better with him. I'm going to love him in Arthur Smith's offense. I think he's going to know how to operate the play action game very, very well. He's going to know where to look. I think he's going to know how to read defenses. He's going to be a decent backup to Marcus Mariota, perhaps even push Marcus Mariota's job at the end of this year, going into next year. That's why he's my QB1. But I had to preface all that by saying QB1 in this class doesn't mean what it used to.
Yeah, it depends on the class. And it seems like the Falcons are sort of crafting a receiving core that can take advantage of some errant throws. You know, you got Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Auden Tate, you know, just these huge dudes with massive catch radius.
And that's how accuracy can improve. The fact that you can, because if you look at his tape, he leaned a lot on certain game circumstances, third and long, or when they needed a play, he went to Alec Pierce, who's 6'3", who has that catch radius. And, you know, and a lot of times he was able to connect with Alec Pierce. So now you're able to add that Drake London. Now you're able to add that Kyle Pitts. Having those two guys alone, like I mentioned earlier, with a guy like Auden Tate, like that can mask the accuracy issues a little bit. And I think I mentioned earlier about the accolades that a lot of these guys have. And yes, he's a two-time AAC Offensive Player of the Year, but he's also an AAC Offensive Rookie Player of the Year as well. Yeah. So this guy took an accolade home in just about every year that he, you know, played at Cincinnati. 4-year starter, only 28 picks in 4 years, very productive, over 10,000 passing yards. So Ridder is the type of quarterback that you can most teams, especially in this particular draft process, you can look at and say, hey, when it comes to production, when it comes to a guy that we know was able to get it done at the collegiate level, he's the answer there, above a guy like Malik Willis. When it comes to this particular offense of Arthur Smith, I think right now, of course, they're banking more so on who can really produce for us quicker, Ridder or Willis. Now, it's ironic that Willis went to Tennessee, which is the same offense that they're running in Atlanta. It was the stars were aligned there a little bit. But I think they're banking more so on like, hey, Ridder is more NFL ready than Willis. And Willis may need a year. He may need 2 years. Who knows? Honestly, depends on how things go. I like the pick. I felt going into this draft that the Falcons were interested in two quarterbacks, Malik Willis and Desmond Ridder. And I felt like they were going to walk away with at least one of them. And they did. And this doesn't kill them. The fact that they waited until round 3 to get a guy like Desmond Ridder, has a higher floor than Malik Willis, in my opinion. At worst, Desmond Ridder can be a 10-year backup in the league, a quality backup, one of the better backups in the league. That at worst. For Malik Willis, at worst, the guy can be out of the league in a handful of years, to be honest with you. That's just is boom or bust with him.
When you said at worst, and then you said a 10-year, I was like, is he about to say at worst, Desmond Ridder could be a 10-year starter?
No.
Like hype train is on. Yeah.
We should have taken him at 8.
He can, you know, spell you a little bit. He can be one of the more top tier, I guess, and I guess lack of a better term there, but he can be a quality backup in the NFL. So
I agree.
And I think, you know, in this particular scheme, I think he fits it very well. And I think he's going to open some things up and allow the Falcons to do what they kind of wanted to do last year, but they didn't have that luxury with Matt Ryan under center.
Yeah.
And I think the game changer here is the fact that they did take him in the third round, because we were talking about Ridder, you know, will he be there in the second round? Do the Falcons possibly have to trade up for him back into the first round? Because, you know, there's that quarterback tax in the draft that just didn't happen this year. I'm sure the Steelers thought that they were going to start that quarterback run at 20. And then I'm sure they were panicking a little bit when they saw that none of these other quarterbacks were getting taken in the second round at all.
Remember the rumors of Ridder going to 8?
Yeah, I remember the rumors of Willis going at 8.
Yeah.
And the thing is, now you got him in the third round. Even if he isn't your franchise quarterback, this doesn't kill you.
Right.
You don't have to put that pressure on him of, all right, you have to come in and you have to be the guy from day one. You know, jobs are on the line now depending on your success, because, you know, in the third round, if the Falcons wanted to next year, they could take a quarterback again. If they're in a position and they really like one of the quarterbacks in next year's class, we've seen it happen before. We've seen it with Washington taking RG3 and Kirk Cousins in the same draft class. Ridder will easily be a movable piece if you do want to go that route, the same way the Patriots moved Jimmy Garoppolo when they saw that they had a large number of quarterbacks on their roster, and Jacoby Brissett as well. So, you know, the Falcons aren't married to Ridder at all. Best case scenario, he does turn into that franchise guy that you got in the third round, the same way that Seattle got Wilson in the third round, the same way that Dallas got Dak in the fifth round. And worst case scenario, you lost out on a third-round pick that you'll easily be able to recoup, because I'm sure with a little bit of development, you'll be able to trade Ridder for a third-rounder at minimum, maybe even a second-rounder in the coming years if you do fall in love with another quarterback, or, you know, if you're in position to take someone like a C.J. Stroud or a Bryce Young next year and you think that they're the franchise quarterback. So taking him in the third round as opposed to even the second round or trading up for him in the first round, that's the X factor of this pick, and that's what makes me really, really like this pick, no matter who the quarterback was that was taking the third round.
I have to be honest here, though. I honestly feel the Falcons might have drafted their next franchise QB.
I'm that
confident.
Yeah, that's the best case scenario.
Especially in this particular scheme. And I know fans are like, man, you know what? They're going to set themselves up for a C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young next year. I don't think they're going to be in a position to do – well, they may be in position to do that, but I think they are going to feel confident enough next season that they're going to say Ridder's our guy. And I think he can really be – the next franchise QB for the Atlanta Falcons.
I just hope that the team isn't in position to contend for anything, that they give Ridder an opportunity.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Give him an opportunity. Yeah. Yeah.
Just so you can see what he has.
And I don't think he's, well, I know ultimately, well, I won't say I know, but he won't be in that tier of the Josh Allens and the Patrick Mahomes.
No.
You know, after development, after he's able to be refined and he gets his feet wet in the NFL, he won't be in that tier. But I think he would be one of those quarterbacks in the league where, you know, he's able to start for many years. And honestly, I felt like there was a Dak Prescott type ceiling with him where it's, you know, I don't think anyone, at least me, I don't really consider Dak Prescott in that elite tier, but he's definitely a quality starter. He's definitely able to win you games, and he's definitely capable of taking you to the playoffs and winning in the playoffs. And I think Ridder ultimately can be that guy, especially in this particular scheme. What is going to be key for the Falcons is continuously adding the talent around him, especially on the offensive line as well, because you want to be able to utilize his skills in the passing as well as a runner as well. So,
and yeah. Here's the thing, if Ridder is your guy, if he does hit as this third round potential franchise quarterback, next year if you're in position and let's say Bryce Young is on the board and you're set on Ridder being your franchise guy, you can get a haul trading back, and then you can continue adding those pieces, because I'm not really worried about O-line maybe this year, but next year the Falcons will have $100 million in free agency to rebuild that offensive line with. You've already given him the weapons. You'll be able to see what he's got a little bit this year. Hopefully left guard is figured out. I'm still a firm believer that Matt Hennessy is the guy at center, and I'm driving that hype train until the wheels fall off. But
the lugs are a little loose. I will say that.
I'm driving the Matt Hennessy hype.
That's cool. You know, somebody has to do it. Somebody's got to stand Matt Hennessy. So, yeah, I mean, I stand him during that draft. So to prove my draft takes right, he needs to turn into the Falcons starting center. So I'm with you there.
PFF graded him higher than Alex Mack last year. That's all I'm going to say.
Any comment on that, Trevor?
Look, yeah, as the person who grades every player,
it's you, I think.
Look, I think but clearly the people who are grading him like him a lot, so yes, I'll stay on the grades. It's fine.
I was gonna say nobody's allowed to say anything bad about PFF on this show.
You can say whatever you want. It's fine.
No, but I mean, it's
running inherently... backs do matter.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You know, get out of here, nerds. You know, whatever Ben Solak was saying on get the nerds out of football or whatever. No, that I love Ben. He's funny. But I think that he does have a chance to be a franchise quarterback. I don't think like Eric said, I don't think that we're going to be talking about him in this rarefied air of like the top five or even, you know, top 10 guys on a year to year basis. But I think he's certainly capable of having Ryan Tannehill like seasons, like with the Titans when they had everything around Tannehill, they were able to get him to have like a top eight season.
Might want to use a better comp.
Well, you know, but I'm saying like Tannehill was able to have like a top eight season a couple
Arthur
years
Smith
ago.
Arthur Smith made Tannehill really damn good.
Yes,
so.
He did.
And I think Desmond Ridder can certainly at least be that. If things go to plan, and you know, obviously you're probably hoping for a little bit more career longevity, and hopefully it won't take quite as long as it took for Tannehill. But what do you think about his actual chances of turning into a franchise quarterback? We're not saying, you know, top five elite NFL starter, but a guy that you could see, you know, taking on that role and filling it admirably for the Falcons for maybe a second contract. What do you think the actual chances of that are?
I definitely think it's there for sure. I'm like, I believe in his ability. And I think, you know, the rushing element that's being brought to this offense, I honestly don't think it was executed enough at Cincinnati. And I think he can be, you know, one of those guys that's able to really make some plays with his legs. You know, he ran the, what was it, 4.459 at the combine.
4.52, yeah.
And he's a long strider. He's able to eat up yards with very few steps. And I can't wait to see how that's incorporated when defenses are worrying about where Kyle Pitts is, where Drake London is, where Cordero Patterson is. Now you have to worry about, you know, a guy like Ridder kind of leaking out and getting on the run with plenty of grass in front of him. So I think this is a pick, honestly, that can pay dividends for him down the line. And I think he really has the capability of being the next franchise quarterback for the Falcons.
And you guys were mentioning Ryan Tannehill. At least we don't have Ryan Tannehill here to teach or to not teach Desmond Ridder what he does or doesn't know, like Malik Willis up in Tennessee.
Yeah, Trevor, what do you think about Ritter's chances of actually hitting and being sort of what fans are hoping for in terms of a franchise level quarterback?
The opportunity's there for him. You know, certainly look at Marcus Mariota, and like, I think Marcus Mariota got dealt a bad hand when he was in Tennessee, given the lack of weapons around him and how he had different offensive line coaches every single year. So I think that, like, yeah, he got the short end of the stick. So there's reason to believe that, like, Marcus will be okay as a starting quarterback in Atlanta, but Ritter's going to have the chance to push for that starting job over the next 2 years. And like I said, it's not like he's going to step in and be this project quarterback. I think he's going to be able to impress right away when it comes to practice and preseason and all that stuff. So look, I think that, like you guys have said, he's got all the tools. The one thing that worries me is the accuracy when it comes to the touch passes, because those players that you want to continue to believe in, that give you those handful of throws that you go, that's my franchise quarterback, they're often those almost kind of like backyard football kind of like crazy plays. And a lot of times that involves some no thinking, all touch kind of passes. And like, those are the things that I'm worried about him a little bit. I think that he could definitely succeed really well in structure. And I think at the very worst, you're going to have a good young bridge quarterback for when you end up finally being able to get that franchise guy, whether it's in free agency or a big trade, or maybe 1 year you're trading up to go get a quarterback or whatever it is. I think Devin Ritter, it will at least give you that chance to potentially be a franchise guy.
Yeah. Yeah. In the third round, I think it's a great swing. And if he just becomes a good backup for you long-term, you know, I think like, if he reminded us of another Falcons third round pick quarterback in Matt Schaub, who was a backup for most of his career, but did have a stretch of 4 or 5 years in Houston where he was making Pro Bowls. I think he led the league in passing under Shanahan 1 year. Like, I could see that as a possible career path for Ritter as well. A guy who is a really, really long tenured NFL player who plays like 10, 15 years in the league, isn't necessarily this elite level starter for most of it, but could have a peak of 4 to 5 years of being, you know, a fringe sort of Pro Bowl guy in the right situation. So that's the hope. That's the hope. And did you have something else you wanted to add on?
Yeah, no. And Matt Schaub is someone that the Falcons had on the roster for a few years and easily dealt, you know, in fairness, when they thought that Mike Vick was the guy, and that did not end up working out for them because, you know, Mike Vick had the legal troubles, but who could have seen that coming? But yeah, I like it way more, the fact that it's a third round pick, just because there's a chance that Ritter is a franchise guy, but he doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
And if he's not, then it's not like the front office is going to be losing their jobs over it. Because there's some guys where, you know, you make that pick, and if he doesn't pan out, then, you know, heads will roll. Like, you marry yourself to that quarterback.
Right.
And the fact that this isn't that case, that leaves open so many possibilities, and it's just a great move to get him in the third. And it was lucky that Ritter was there in the third round. I do not think he should have fallen that low. I don't think Willis should have fallen to the third round either, but I think every team except for Pittsburgh that ended up with the quarterback got really good value out of it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I liked it. I liked the class as a whole. I think it was good. And I appreciate Trevor Sikkema for coming on and breaking it down with us tonight in detail. Awesome analysis, Trevor. Appreciated your analysis, your opinions as from an outside perspective. Yeah. Anything else, Trevor, you wanted to add before we wrap up tonight?
No, appreciate you guys having me on. This was a lot of fun. It was good to, again, talk about draft classes. It's cool to talk about the fits now that these guys are officially drafted. And it was great to hear y'all's thoughts as well, what you guys think of these guys and how you think they're going to play in their rookie years and beyond. So this is great. Appreciate you guys having me.
Absolutely, guys. He's still at Tampa Bay Trey, no longer at Peter Report. He's at PFF. I'll make sure to have the you know, the nameplate updated correctly next time. But Trevor, really appreciate you. Also with us tonight, we had Adnan Ekic at Say Which Way on the Twitters. Adnan, anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
Stick with the Falcoholic for schedule stuff coming up this week. Schedule is being announced tomorrow, and we'll have a bunch of articles breaking everything down regarding the schedule. The NFL is really making a big scene out of it, you know, doing it daily with these primetime games this year. But, you know, it's the NFL. They can get away with everything.
Yeah, yeah. Also with us tonight, we have Eric Robinson. He's at @_Eric_Robinson. Eric, anything else you'd like to add tonight?
No. Like I didn't mention, man, you know, check out the Falcoholic. That's your one-stop shop for everything Falcons. And yeah, be sure to be on the lookout for schedule release tomorrow. There is a schedule release special on ESPN at 8 p.m.
All right, get that plug in. Good job.
Yes.
Real company man,
tossing
Eric Robinson.
Yes. Tossing that out there while we're here.
The bosses are watching.
Good job.
But yeah.
Snuck it in there at the end. Great job.
Glad to be here, man. Glad to talk to you.
Yeah, happy to have you back on, always. Yeah, we did have one final tip come in from Ray Moon with the $5. He says, I'm still a fan of Felipe Franks. I think something's wrong with me.
Yeah, something is. Sorry. I appreciate you giving appreciate you guys giving these guys $5 to get that in the show. But as somebody who is a University of Florida grad.
Yeah, you think the friendship has sailed? You didn't like his turn as a tight end on the Falcons last year?
That would be a better position for him.
He played it in Atlanta last year. He did.
Well, you know, he should.
Continue. If you don't remember, then you're doing better than we are. So
what you're telling me is that we need to add Felipe to the passing element for
correct.
So line him up alongside Pitts and London and.
You cannot teach size, baby.
You can't teach it.
I guess.
Beautiful. Yeah, I don't know how a guy who tests out that well as an athlete has such a low yards per carry. I feel like his yards per carry was like 2 or something at Florida, which was very shocking to me. But then I watched him try to run Wildcat in Atlanta, and I was like, oh, yeah.
He was a 5-star recruit out of high school, if I remember correctly.
He certainly looks the part.
Yeah, he was in that Jacob Eason class. And it's just
whatever happened to him as well.
I think he's in Indy right now, right?
Yeah.
No, I think Eason's in Indianapolis now. Backing up our old friend.
Yep, Matt Ryan. So shout out to Matt Ryan, by the way, guys. Yeah. Also, guys, I'm Kevin Knight, Falcoholic Kevin. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. Really appreciate it. Like and subscribe if you don't mind. Leave us a comment after the show with if you have ideas about future content you want to see this summer. You know, we're going to need some of it. So if you have content ideas, you know, throw those in there for sure. But yeah, we really appreciate everyone. Like I said, like and subscribe. You can check out the Patreon at patreon.com/FalcoholicLive, guys. And we will be back next week. We'll be breaking down the schedule release and anything interesting that happens at rookie minicamp. You know, fingers crossed that something interesting and positive happens, but it's rookie minicamp. So, you know, don't get, you know, too excited. There's probably not going to be anything, but if there is, we'll talk about it next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Again, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. We will talk to you next time on the Falcoholic Live. Thanks once again to Trevor. Thanks to Adon and Eric also for coming on tonight. We will see you guys next week. Have a good night, folks.